Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
And finally, I'm chatting with Chantel Marks this evening. She, of course, Head of Research at FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantel, appreciate the time this evening. We had some coronation results out. Assets under management up 11%, which is not bad considering the size. HEPS a bit distorted, of course, by the victory against SARS. They'd made a provision that sort of came back into the result. As always, most of the HEPS going out as dividend, market liking the results, and probably looking forward, probably expecting some more good numbers from Coronation Farm. But it's looking well positioned, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely, particularly if we continue to see decent market returns, because a big chunk of their business is AUM based or assets under management based, and we have still sector-wide outflows, so people and institutions taking their money out of Coronation's product. But the market gives a lot of support to that asset under management number. And if you've got good, decent market returns, it will continue to drive the top line and by extension, profitability.
Yeah, I mean, if the market's just up, say, 10%, then they should be up 10% and make 10%. There's T's and C's around that. But the key kicker then, of course, is that they can get performance fees. And that really, I suppose, is cream on the top.
Yes, and they've got a really good track record of beating the benchmark to the extent that they do earn performance fees. Mm-hmm. But of course, that can also change from year to year. So that does induce a little bit of uncertainty. I think the other thing to be uncertain around is the cost structure, because they have seen costs grow quite a bit. But again, if they're able to push assets under management, even at a market performance, because markets are supportive, then that cost base becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, and that money flows through straight to the bottom line and in turn to the dividend.
Yeah, absolutely. It ends up in shareholders' hands. Switching tracks, we've got the Boxer IPO closing Friday. This, of course, Pick and Pay looking to sell some 40% to raise some $8 billion. I got to say, I can't remember when last there was such an anticipated listing. I mean, we buy cars, but if that was just an unbundling. But a good old-fashioned listing like this, I mean, I almost want to go back to Signia, and I think that was like 8 years ago. The market is excited for this one.
Yes, also Dis-Chem. It reminds me a lot about a lot of the Dis-Chem listing, because there was so much excitement around it. And from what we understand, the book is looking very healthy in terms of applications. So I think that there's a good chance that it will trade reasonably well in its first few days as a listed entity, because the offer range, I think, looks quite fair. I mean, we ran a variety of models and scenarios, and basically that offer price just tells us that the management team isn't trying to sell us something that isn't there. It is trying to sell us something at a reasonable price. So yeah, I really like the prospect. I think it's a good one to try and get your hands on. But it could be difficult to get it at a reasonable valuation and to get your hands on it post-listing.
I take your point, and I suspect if it's oversubscribed, we're going to get less than necessarily we applied for. The listing is exciting and all, but truthfully, there's really good growth prospects going forward as well for Boxer. They're in the right space. They've got a lot of expansion. Look, they're up against ShopRite, and that's no easy feat, but they've got good growth prospects in the years ahead.
Yes, so I mean, even if we just take what the economy is going to offer them over the next few years, so that would be a combination of population growth, inflation, and economic growth, which is starting to look a lot better, you already get at about 7.5% growth. They're planning to expand their retail space by about 10% per year over the next few years.
Yep.
If you add that on top of that, suddenly it's not ridiculous to expect at least 17.5% growth per annum. And that is very, very healthy in a market where we've struggled for growth and struggled to identify growth companies specifically for a really long time.
There's another wiggle to this, of course, because I'm kind of doing the math in my head, so maybe I'm slightly out, but essentially Pick and Pay gets $8 billion. They then hold the other 60% of Boxer. That's more than the current market cap of Pick and Pay. So if I'm a Pick and Pay shareholder, I don't get Boxer shares, but suddenly I seem to be getting Pick and Pay for free or almost free.
Yes, so what you must just be careful of is that the company is going to reinvest, also a big chunk of that 8 billion is going to go towards paying down debt.
Yeah.
But you're basically taking a chance that Pick n Pay will be able to execute on the turnaround in Pick n Pay supermarkets that are loss-making at the moment, and could actually charge some of that money that's coming their way. So that's the risk, I guess. But if you think that there is a business case there and that they'll be able to turn it around, then Pick n Pay also makes sense as a potential entry point into Boxer, particularly if you struggle to get your hands onto stock, and if you struggle to get your hands onto stock at a reasonable price.
Yeah, 100%. Switching track, Growthpoint, they're developing a 800 million Durban student housing development. I must say, I mean, Growthpoint is the giant daddy in terms of listed property in South Africa, the V&A, which is a gold standard asset. But they've really got these other interesting little bits. They've also got some healthcare sitting within in Growthpoint. Do they ever spin it out?
So they may not. They're minority owned, firstly, and they get a really lack of management fee for that. But I would love to see these companies grow to a kind of a level or a size where they can be separately listed. I think it adds accountability and also some interest on the JSE, because we don't have a student accommodation retail investment trust. This is how that kind of investment is structured already as a real estate investment trust. We don't have a healthcare property REIT besides the stuff that's coming through from the UK. And then they've got this Lango business as well, which is Africa specific, and everyone's a bit scared of Africa, but they seem to be executing quite well there. So I hope they do it eventually, because I do see the attractiveness of that, particularly for local investors.
Yeah, and I suppose a critical mass is a part of that process, and maybe they're still working towards that. Tomorrow we've got local inflation data due. We're expecting another print, a good print, this being for October. This should give us a good read ahead to the MPC on Thursday as well. But, I mean, really the market is expecting a good number on inflation and expecting, I suppose, another quarter point cut from the MPC on Thursday afternoon.
Yes, so if we were only looking at inflation and we were only looking at what the inflation trajectory and expectations are for the next 6 months, the 25 basis point cut is happening. And I do think that it will still happen regardless of the spanner in the works from the Trump election being that you could still see inflation, you could see inflation tick up a bit because of some of those policies that are being introduced. But we do expect about 3% inflation in October, which is comfortably below the 4.5% level, and we expect it to stay below 4% for the first half of 2025. The thing that we must remember is that we don't know if those policies are going to be introduced and in what form and exactly how inflationary they're going to be. So for the time being, we just follow the data.
But you've been saying, you've said to me before on various different shows, that you're expecting the rate cutting cycle in this particular cycle to perhaps be shallow. In other words, don't expect us back sort of sub 10% at all. We're going to have some cuts, but then we're going to pause.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a combination of factors. I think the Trump thing is probably the new factor. Mm. But the old factor is that the Saab really wants to lower the inflation target.
Yeah.
At the moment, it's between 3% and 6%, with kind of a loose firm target at 4.5%. But they would really like it to be closer to 3%. And in order to do that, they need to keep interest rates higher than what they would normally do during a cutting cycle. And they need to actually do this in a cutting cycle, because it is then less negative for the real economy. So I think that there's a fair chance that that could be that cutting cycle will still be very shallow, and that chance is probably heightened by the Trump re-election.
Yeah, if anything, the Fed cutting cycle probably also got shallower. But as you say, we're not quite sure exactly what he's going to do. Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Always appreciate the time.
Business on Heart 1027 with MoneyWeb.